gentlemen, ladies. I have the great pleasure to meet you and talk to you on the tape recorder today on a very important subject of self-knowledge and God-knowledge. Since the beginning of creation, when the first flicker of self-awakening dawned on man, his attention has been more and more concerned with the problem of his own worldly existence, an investigation into the cause and source of all creation. For ages, he has probed and queried in vain, but now at last, his increasing thirst for knowledge is turning him to study the results gained by others in the field. Ancient and modern sages echo, "What is that? The knowledge of which makes everything else known." And in the same breath reply, "Knowledge of the higher self, the true man." So the supreme knowledge is that which deals both in theory and practice with man's true nature and his relation to God. It is in fact a natural science without hypothesis. No subject to change or time produces. In ancient India, it was named Paravidya, science of realized truth or science of the beyond. And different denominations sprang up to interpret this knowledge. The term Aparavidya, standing for preparation for achieving the knowledge of Paravidya, was then introduced. This preparation consists of following an ethical life and the practice of concentration in so many ways, both indispensable for spiritual development. Man is constantly changing or introducing new names and terminologies to describe this science. The masters were called saints, and the nature of knowledge, mat, giving us the term sant mat, which is at present largely used to describe the science. Other terms, shabda yoga, sur shabda yoga, sahi yoga, etc., are synonyms. The word saint in Sanskrit, meaning master of the highest order, and mat is confirmed opinion or statement made by an expert out of personal experience. The foundation of this science, therefore, is a result obtained through a critical study, minute investigation, and a lifelong personal verification of facts based on practical experience of self. This experience of self is something that a competent master is prepared to give to each individual who approaches it. Sant Mat is therefore the teachings, system, path of the saints. Masters do not attach any importance to names, designations, or the fact that many religious sects, groups and circles have claimed this science and named it after their leaders or founders. They look upon these groups as schools where man, the noblest being of creation, can study as children of one and the same Almighty Father. A master, also called Sant Satguru, has complete mastery of both theory and practice, and is competent to impart knowledge and experience to all sincere seekers after truth without any distinction whatsoever of color, caste, or creed. Any one man or woman, rich or poor, young or old, sage or sinner, educated or uneducated, who is able to understand the master and his science has a right to acquire this knowledge. The dictionary defines mat as wisdom, but the colloquial meaning is a sect or faith, a group of people holding certain opinions or beliefs in common. Such beliefs and opinions, however, based on stray knowledge and teachings, are not sufficient to carry the support of personal experience, and therefore the discerning man is not led astray by mere empty words. Many societies, faiths, and other religious circles have only a legacy of books, beliefs, and theories to offer those who thirst after spirituality. They conceal their weaknesses and deficiencies behind a screen of warm welcome, an outpouring of technique and terminology, and the showering of spiced words, phrases, sayings, and quotations crammed in the enormous mass of literature we have on the market today. Propaganda and posing has taken the place of practicability, so that the deluded public is being repelled from sacred books and the thought of God. Atheism is therefore on the increase. Believing in a thing or fact without troubling to investigate does not in any way credit on intelligent man. On the contrary, it reflects on his ignorance and credulity. Any belief not based on personal experience and verification of facts has absolutely no value. Thus, a modern man wants a well-defined, clear-cut science, verifiable by his own experience and giving concrete results. We should therefore try to see and hear with our own eyes and ears, rather than indirectly with the eyes and ears of others. Man is composed of body, mind, intellect, and soul. We are extremely careful to develop ourselves physically and mentally, but understand very little about the soul, which is the power ruling both the body and the mind. Physical joys are not lost. There are limitations of body and mind that we cannot shut our eyes to. So we must search for the perennial sources of joy and peace within ourselves. Self-analysis is the first step in this direction. Many doubts cloud our minds at this stage. There is an omnipotent power called God, believed in, worshipped, and talked about by most people. Can we know more about Him? Can we see Him and talk to Him? There is a definite and clear reply to each one of these questions. But the most convincing one comes from a master who in a few brief words exclaims, "Yes, we can see and speak to Him." That is, if we become as exalted as He said to be, masters say yes, and we do not have to wait till death comes, but we can experience it right now. This is in consonance with laws of nature, of which we have as yet no knowledge. Around us we see, we feel that everything, from the tiny atom to the mighty universe, is governed by the law of nature. So to the profound thinker, there is nothing chaotic, haphazard, are uncertain about this universe and the laws which govern it. To gain any objective depth is a law of nature. It's a principle and method involved for checking, testing and weighing the result of our endeavors. So it is too in this science of nature, and similar methods can be traced by any careful student in all religious scriptures, expressed in different words in various languages. We wished to enter the kingdom of God, but how? With the help and guidance of one who has himself entered and can guide us there, is the simple reply from the masters. Is it possible? It is a knowledge which is exact and as sure as 2 and 2 make 4, is their reply away. It is not enough to be content with holy books and the singing of praises and the hymns. We must strive for the same degree of advancement as the authors of the talks and knowledge recorded in these books have achieved. Their experience must become our experience. For what a man has done, a man can do, of course, with proper guidance and help. We should stop at nothing short of this. We have hardly a dim spark of love for him. Will it help to cherish a hope? This is another question asked, and saints reply, it is sufficient to make you eligible for the highest science of approach to him. It is a pleasing ray of hope. Oh, if this small spark will be kindled into a flame. Again we ask, Jesus, another great master, spoke so lovingly of him, but we are sinners and there may not be much hope for us in this age. The master's soothing reply is, no matter, if you are the worst of sinners, stop where you are. There's hope for everybody, even in this crucial age. Ages ago, nature wept for us materially and spiritually. Today, the same unchangeable law is operating and will continue to do so in the future. There's food for the hungry and water for the thirsty. Nature's demand and supply works. It is only through a living master that one can contact the Almighty God within. In Sanskrit, contemplation of objects or images is not advised, which is indeed harmful to progress. Photographs of the masters are for remembrance and recognition only. And on no account should we become attached to such external practices. A man, according to the science of Paravidya, is not entitled to be called man in the true sense of the word, unless he has full knowledge, both theoretical and practical, of his distinguished position in creation, his several component parts, body, mind and soul, in this order of comparative importance, and his relationship with the unseen power while yet living on this earth. He who does not understand this much has not been introduced to the first lesson and is yet to begin the alphabet of man. The saints therefore impress the need of man-making. When scientifically observed facts drawn from practice and experiment are explained verbally to a gathering by a master saint, it is called satsang external. This satsang constitutes the theoretical side of their teachings, whereas the actual performance to develop and achieve inner advancement is the practical part called meditation and satsang internal. conscientious practice brings fruit within days or weeks and is not necessary to wait years for results. A true master gives first-hand experience on the very first sitting. We are not all of the same mental standard, and thus the time will differ. When the practical side is neglected due to lack of firmness or determination, carelessness or pressure of circumstances, scholars of the many religious schools dwell more and more upon theory alone. The decline of the science then commences, and man finds no solace. This is usually the case when a master leaves the body. Adequate provision, however, is made for the revival of this science in every age, when both the positive and negative powers commence their rounds again, the former through the agency of master souls, while the latter work through persons, so-called masters, who lack practical experience or are deluded in theoretical disputations. These master souls, though quite ordinary in appearance, are a great deal more. Just as it is difficult for us to judge a scientist, a doctor, or an engineer until they speak out or display their skill, so too we cannot recognize their aptitude and authority till we have experienced the divine power working through them. In this science, there is no secrecy or mystery. The objective is constructive and beneficial to man. So saints have torn aside the curtain of secrecy to make it available to each and everyone who calls. There is an unseen power working through the saints. Why this power prefers to remain concealed from the human eye is a question to be asked directly by contacting the human pole, the master saint, through whom the power is working. This is the only medium of approach to him. If we wish to use electric energy, we must go to a switch or pole which will put us in contact with the powerhouse. This unseen power can be called a sea of love. When we wish to bathe, we go to the edge where the shallow waters begin and say we have bathed in the sea. Thus, to experience that power and to derive real benefit from the knowledge of God, we have to go to the only source of contact, the master saints. That nature has designed man to leave his physical body at will, transcend to higher spiritual planes, and then return to the body. They help each aspirant personally, and each receives a practical experience, how little it may be, during the very first sitting at the time of initiation. A person who is competent to give man this personal experience of withdrawal or separation temporary from the body, and who can thus put him on the way to higher spiritual realms, is a genuine master, saint, or sadhu. The heads of different religious organizations were intended to do just this, but we may judge for ourselves their efficacy today. The first-hand experience we receive through the kindness and grace of a real saint is in itself the solution of the problem of death. According to the Bible, unless you are born anew, you cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. So to be born again is to leave one's body and enter into the beyond, a transition from the physical to the astral. Someday, we have to leave this temporary structure, which, like a building of bricks and mortar, deteriorates with time. There is no appeal in the laws of nature against the death sentence. We fear death because of the agony suffering and uncertainty about the unknown beyond. We fear illness because it brings us near death's door. And so we struggle to live, though we know our end is certain. No soothing words from the doctors, friends, relatives, or priests can bring peace and comfort to our minds. At the time, nature's destructive process commences. This is the natural course of things, and we cannot deceive nature. What then is the remedy? There is only one way out of this abyss of despair, and it is to adopt and accustom ourselves during our lifetime to nature's process, to move side by side with nature, and master the process of withdrawal of spirit current from the body while in the conscious state through the help of a saint, and this without any suffering or trouble whatsoever. This is not a possibility, but a remarkable fact. Our joy will know no bounds when we come into possession of a secret that has baffled man for so many centuries. We become supermen in possession of a key to peace and heaven, of which we had till then only read about in sacred scriptures. Arise, therefore, and awake before it is too late to put this sacred science into practice. If we closely observe the process of death in a dying man, we see the pupils of his eyes turn upwards a little, and afterwards they may return to normal, and then he becomes senseless. When they draw upwards too much, he dies. Life ebbs out via the root of the eyes and is disconnected from the sight of the physical body and the organs of sense. Knowledge of this process and the method by which to travel this very way during our lifetime is the solution to the problem of death. No exercises are necessary, no drugs to swallow, and no blind faith to cultivate. This mystery of life and death is solved easily through the help of a master saint who will give you experience of the process and put you on the high road to higher realms. Even when acting indirectly through an authorized agent, he still remains the responsible power. Distance is immaterial to him. What is there gained by this process? This cannot be described on paper. At initiation, the aspirant sees the real light within him grow to the radiance of several suns put together, whereas normally the eyes are covered by a thick veil of darkness. He now realizes that the tradition of the lighted candle found in churches and temples is to remind man of the divine light of heaven within. He understands that the unceasing internal sound he contacts within is the divine link called Word by Christ, Kalma and Nidai Asmani by the Quran, Nad by the Vedas, Udgit by the Upanishads, Sarosha by the Zoroastrians, and Naam and Shabd by the saints and masters. He meets the master within, talks to him face to face, and is henceforth certain of his grace, guidance, and protection wherever he may go, even at the other end of the earth. With evident proofs before him, he is now confident of himself and the science. Only now he can be called a theist in the true sense of the word, and can smile at those who talk of religion as a fool's paradise, a phantom conjured up by the craft of priests. the opinion of the masses, and it is clear. He has found a sure ingress to the doorway of heaven in this life, is on the threshold of viewing both internally and externally the secrets of nature. He is verily knocking at the door of heaven and tapping inside. Words of opposition cannot shake his faith in the science as the master guides him forward. Death becomes a voluntary process. Past, present and future merges into one, and he grasps the incontestable truth, the pith of all intelligence in the palm of his hand. Liberated from the body, which now appears a husk clothed in rags, he feels his soul, inseparable part of the eternal spirit, and presses onwards to his original source. The world appears a dream to him, but under instructions from his master, he returns to his mundane life, wise and fearless in the discharge of his duties. Just as in any other science, certain preliminary qualifications are there too required before progress can be made. Married life, hard work, or a poor environment is no bar. It does not count in your favor that you may hold a high position or possess immense wealth. Neither does membership of a particular faith serve as a recommendation. Wherever he may be, man must strive for nobility of character, self-control, and purity of heart. Purity in thought, word, and deed is essential. Blessed are the pure at heart, for they shall see God. An ethical life is a stepping stone to spirituality. But spirituality is, however, not just ethical life. This we must always bear in mind. We can divide man's life into one, that, and two, his dealings with others. With regards to diet, vegetarianism and teetotalism is essential. Thou shalt not kill. Live and let live should be our principle in life. Body is a temple of God and a sacred place. We are not to neglect it or abuse it. We should take best possible care to maintain it. With regard to our dealings, we should sow the seed of kindness in order to reap its fruit. Love and humility is most necessary. Do to others as you would wish they should do unto you. Love and all blessings shall be added unto you. Love thine enemies. All intoxicants are also to be avoided, as they make us morbid and lose consciousness. These are not empty sayings, but very wise advice. Each thought, each deed, and each word has to be accounted and compensated for in nature. Every cause has an effect, and every action brings about a reaction. Uproot the cause and the effect disappears. This has been done by the masters who have transcended these laws. Others are bound by the bonds of karma. The root cause of physical existence and the clever device of nature to maintain this existence. The law of karma sees to it that we are paid an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth in the shape of joy or suffering. It is a goading whip in the hidden hands of nature. the mind context karma puts a covering on the soul and rules the body through the organs and senses. Although it is the soul that can impart strength to the mind, the latter has taken up sovereignty and governing instead. Even accomplished yogis and mystics who can transcend to higher spiritual realms are not left untouched by the hand of karma. Saints classify karma in three distinct groups as follows. First, sanchit, are stored. Good or bad deeds that stand to our account as earned and contracted in all these bodies of any order of creation, counting from the day of first appearance of life on earth. Alas, man knows nothing about them or their extent. Second, prarabdha, fate or destiny, the result and effect of which has brought man into his present body and had to pay it in this earth. The reaction of these karma comes to us unexpectedly and unperceived in obligatory form, and we have no control over it. Good or bad, we have to tolerate or bear this karma, laughing or weeping as it happens to suit us. 3. Kiriman, current account of our actions and deeds in the present body. This is distinct from the above two groups, because here man is absolutely free to do exactly as he pleases within certain limits. Knowingly or unknowingly, deeds committed and coming under this heading bear fruit. The result of some of these we reap before we die, and the residue is transferred to the sanchit storehouse. Karma is the cause of rebirth, and each birth is in turn followed by death. Thus the cycle of enjoyment and suffering, birth and death, continues. As you wish, so you become. It is a simple law of nature owing to which this universe exists. No amount of integrity or genius can absolve a man as long as there is the slightest trace of karma. Ignorance of the law is no excuse, and though there may be some concession or relaxation with man-made laws under special circumstances, there is no allowance made for this in nature's laws. Prayers, confession and atonement may give temporary mental relief, but they cannot overcome karma. All karma must be wiped out completely before permanent salvation can be found. Disturbed by these facts, man seeks solace in deep pious doctrines, or when he comes to know that both good and bad deeds are fetters, one of gold, the other of iron, he turns to renunciation. Different faiths promise relief, but he soon finds out that this is only temporary. How then does a master approach this problem? At the time of initiation, he takes entire charge of karma of his disciples. First, the sanchit account, or big general account, is squared up. The process is similar to putting a handful of seeds in a pan and placing it on a fire, which then causes the seeds to puff up and lose the property of growing again. Then the Kiriman, new account, is dealt with. After warning his disciples to guard against opening any new account of bad deeds, the master grants his general clemency in respect of such past deeds, part of which the disciple has already settled in this life after the time of initiation. Prarabdha, destiny, karma is not touched by the saints, because this is the cause of the physical body, which would vanish to the interference with nature's laws. A very small amount of karma now remains to be tolerated in the physical body for the remaining years of the disciple's life. But even this is softened by the grace of the Master. In moments of misery, worry and trouble, the Master is our refuge. He acts unperceived at any distance. Just as the mother of a sick child holds the child securely in her lap during an operation so that it does not feel the pain, so too the Master holds us in a loving embrace. The abundance of sympathy, love and kindness, the saints at times take upon their own shoulders some karmic suffering of their disciples through the law of sympathy. There is no court of trial after death for a love-hearted disciple. The Master is all in all for him. Why does a Master Saint take all this on himself? Because he inherits his merciful nature from God above, who commissions him to personally distribute this treasure of mercy. Thus he is honored like God. And Saint Mat has volumes of books written in praise of the Masters. And as many more books written will hardly do justice to the vastness of their love and kindness. Time casts its heavy shadow on man. He has to toil hard to keep pace with the changing times. So deeply is he absorbed in his external needs and desires that he forgets all about contentment, sympathy and love. Entangled and surrounded by the deadly five, lust, anger, greed, attachment and vanity, he stumbles and cries out to the unseen for help. Heaven's mercy is stirred, and so as times stiffen, the Almighty extends his help to Masters more and more, lavishly. Such is the case in this Kali Yuga, the Iron Age. It is indeed very hard to believe that anyone can be above the five passions mentioned above, and that he can enter the kingdom of heaven during his lifetime. All mankind is under the control of these five. Only Master can save a man from their clutches. We all demand reliable proof before committing ourselves, and this is given by a Master in the shape of an experience of the life impulse, or norm, world, and inner vision. Contact with the Master is essential. Those who keep aloof and depend on themselves, or rely on tradition and priests, equally ignorant as themselves, are deprived of contact with this power. And as the saying goes, when the blind leads the blind, both will fall into the ditch. Indifference, non-acceptance, and disbelief will not be to our advantage when nature enforces its universal ordinance. Our position will be that of a pigeon who, on seeing a cat approaching, shuts its eyes and believes that now the cat cannot molest it. But in a few seconds, the poor bird is in the powerful jaws of the cat. It is too late to think of escape now. Be alert while there is yet time. Perhaps it will not be out of place to explain here the term spirituality, which is often confused with blind faith in sacred books, a display of miracles, psychic phenomena, or yogic powers. Spirituality is inner experience, and its alphabet begins where all philosophy and yoga practices terminate. It is the experience of the soul. When one says, "I am body," it is a feeling based on intellect and is defined as ignorance. When he says, "I am not body," I am awakened soul, it is learned knowledge or theory only. But when he gets actual experience of the soul by self-analysis and contacts the over-self, it is spirituality. The first practical lesson commences when there is complete withdrawal from the physical body through the kindness of a practical master. No one can withdraw and separate himself unaided from the physical body. If, however, anyone claims otherwise and thinks he can, he deceives himself. All attempts without the assistance of a master, who alone is qualified to impart this experience, will end in utter failure. Masters come to distribute this treasure of spiritual blessings to the seekers after truth. Spirituality cannot be bought. It is not taught. It is caught by contact with spiritual people. Moreover, nature's gifts with air, water, light, etc., free. Spirituality is also nature's gift and given gratis by masters. Likewise, spirituality cannot be acquired from books, which is a fact all sacred scriptures uphold. Books are the valuable record of inner experiences in spirituality. They fill up gaps in history and contain messages of past masters which help us to verify the facts revealed by present masters, thus confirming our faith in the science. Man is confused by the various translations, interpretations and expositions, each different from the other, which instead of relieving his mind tend rather to bewilder and confuse him. His egoism too has created a religious circle whose aim is aloofness and narrow orthodoxy instead of love, disintegration instead of concentration. Torn between conflicting emotions, is it then a wonder men think of hating war? For an understanding of the science of the masters, we attend satsang, where the majority of our doubts are clear. Direct inquiries from the masters will take care of the remaining doubts. All questions receive the same calm consideration and no arguments are offered. Rich or poor, high or low, all receive equal attention in the same manner as a doctor should attend to the sick. A true master views a man's rights and wrongs as clearly as one sees the pickle contents in a glass jar, but he reveals nothing. Sitting before him, even those who do not understand his language are benefited in the same way as one in a perfumer's shop enjoys the smell of sweet scents. The master showers blessings through his looks, which eager ones catch. His eyes are a wonderful spray of love. Do not judge such a master by his external appearance, genealogical descent, rich or poor attire, country of origin, how he talks, walks, eats, or the position he holds, the number of books he is author of, or by what people say of him. First receive the inner experience he promises, and then judge from that elevated angle of vision. Self-experience is the criterion for judging a genuine master. Any living person who sees things from a height, man his and his embarrassments, difficulties and helplessnesses, and who has studied the problems confronting humanity can provide the solutions, is able to correct and guide man visibly and invisibly. morally and spiritually, in theory as well as practice. He is a fit person to take the responsible position of a master. Blessed are those who experience a stirring emotion of happiness and longing in their hearts on hearing the news that such a master exists and is near. Spirituality is a science simpler and easier than all other sciences. Man has not to exert except in molding himself ethically and morally to that climax of love, sincerity and humility which will produce the necessary state of receptivity in him. Everything else is in the hands of the master. Again, spirituality should not be judged by the number of followers one has. A good speaker can attract crowds anywhere, yet may not be anything material or convincing in speech. Spirituality is not the exclusive possession of any family or place, but is like a scented flower, growing wherever nature has ordained and around which the bees gather so far and wide to sip the nectar. Master, do not rush after the glory of self, although they certainly deserve this glory. Even in ordinary talks, they will be heard to say, "Oh, it is all the grace of my master. It is none of my doing. My master deserves all praise and credit." This humility places them far above the low level of egoism found in this world. Masters have come in all ages to offer this natural science to man. Only those who are discontented with this world rush to them. Others, to whom worldly attractions, pleasures and luxuries are dear, turn their backs. Those in whose hearts all noble sentiments are dead not only put all possible obstacles in the way of the saints, but also subject them to various kinds of torture. As a study of the lives of Jesus, Guru Nanak, Kabir, and several others will show. So masters have come in the past, are existing today, and will continue to come in the future for the spiritual benefit of man. To suppose and accept that spirituality has become extinct or locked up after the existence of a certain master, and that sacred books are now the only guide, shows the thoughtlessness of man. How can we distinguish between a genuine and a false master is the question that arises now. There is in fact no such testing stone or magical formula except that of self-experience for discriminating right from wrong, truth from falsehood, and reality from unreality. Even in the time of Emperor Janaka, the father of Sita of the Ramayana, who was prepared to pay a big ransom for the theoretical knowledge of this science, only one Yagvalka out of all the rishis, yogis and munis in India was able to do so and win the prize. Yagvalka had the moral courage to admit, "Janak, I know the theory side only and have no personal experience of it." On a second occasion, Emperor Janak proclaimed that he wanted a practical experience of this science on a certain date, and that in a very short period too, not exceeding time taken to steadily horse, putting each foot in its respective stirrup. Great spiritualists throughout the length and breadth of India were invited, but at the appointed time, only one person stepped forward to accept the challenge. This was a hunchback named Ashtavakra, who had 8 humps and crooks in his body. The audience, taking him for a maniac, laughed aloud at his appearance Ashtavakra said, how can you expect to get the spiritual experiences from these cobblers you have collected, who have only eyes for the skin and the body, but cannot see within? The experience was duly given to the emperor within the time allotted. The point to consider is that at the time when spirituality was thriving, only one person came forward to accept the challenge. In these times, when materialism is on the increase, we do not find competent masters growing like mushrooms. So search we must, not allowing false propaganda, the testimony of others, blind faith, the promise of a future happiness, and our regard for position, wealth, prayer, lead us astray. Blind faith is one of the main obstacles to overcome. What we simply listen to, read or follow without investigating as to what and where it will lead to is blind faith. If one is careless to forget the end while following the means and does not check himself to see whether he is nearing the end or not, it is still blind faith. When one comes to the master, he listens attentively to the explanations given by him on the subject of gaining self-knowledge by self-analysis duly supported by one or more quotations from the valuable sayings of various saints. He is intellectually convinced to take up safely on the way as an experimental measure and act up to what the master says with faith for the time being. This is the first stepping stone to learn about reality. When he has the experience firsthand, however a small degree it may be, he is convinced and progresses from day to day. Today, man listens to talks, lectures and sermons, accepts and believes these all his life, and takes for granted that he has been placed firmly on the way to salvation. But when death comes, with all his suffering, pangs of separation, and fears of the unknown, which irresistibly works, realizes his mistake. This sure and certain process of nature and his lifelong habit of attachment to the body occupies all his thoughts, while friends, doctors, relatives, and priests stand by hopeless and despairing. It is here that the science of paravidya is of great help to us. The soul's withdrawal from the body is greatly eased, and the master appears to receive and guide him further in the upper regions. Death is to him the happiest of events, and like marriage, it is a union with the beloved. He has already visited and convinced himself of the superiority of these regions, and traverses the familiar territory without fear. My master, Hazur Baba Samar Singh Ji, impressing the need of spiritual practices on his disciples, used to say to them, go and see a disciple dying to get convinced. Saints believe in salvation during lifetime and not in salvation after death. This is indeed a simple and easy science. The disciple should never rest content with his initiation without a spiritual experience. A regular time should be devoted to the practices. The master must be regularly informed of his progress. He should constantly seek the guidance of his master personally or by letter, without entertaining thoughts that he is bothering the master. The master knows by intuition how each disciple is faring and can remove most of the difficulties by thought transference or other means. But he wishes the difficulty in progress to be brought to his notice in writing. The ancient path of Surya Yoga or Paravidya is one that can be followed by men women and children of all ages without any difficulties, unlike other ways involving complicated strenuous exercises and control of the breath, which leads to a slight control over the self and a few paltry powers. The latter methods also require a strong physique and a rich diet, and are condemned by masters as unsuited in this age and even dangerous. In the physical body, two main currents are working that control life, one a motor current, breathing or prana, and the other a sensory current, which may also be called attention or soul. Master saints ignore the former altogether, so that the breathing is not interfered with and the life process goes on. The sensory current ramifies throughout the entire body and the chief center lies between and behind the eyebrows along with the mind. We have to withdraw the sensory current or the spirit to its center. The mind will not allow man to have knowledge of the soul. Its nature is to seek pleasure, and its constant fluctuations difficult to subdue. Attuning oneself with the internal sound current is the only way to calm the mind and practice concentration. To any school of thought or society a man may belong does not matter. He is not to convert himself and can continue where he is. There are no hard and fast rules, no rituals, no ceremonies, no pomp and show, no offering of gifts, even flowers. All the disciple has to do is to enter inside and henceforth consider the body his laboratory. With regard to the theory, he has to understand the problem, which is just briefly the pit of what he will hear in satsangs. Master is not the body. He is the power functioning through the body and is using it to teach and guide man in much the same way as a spirit uses the medium. Only in bodily form will the disciple be able to recognize him, the master, in upper regions and here on earth. 2. Master is Shabad, Naam, Word, Link, Nad, etc. All words have the same significance, which is a link with the infinite path leading to ultimate reality and will take man to his goal. 3. For the sake of those disgusted with life and who yearn for permanent happiness and peace away from the world and its worries, this world assumes a body to afford them solace. Christ said, "Word was made flesh and dwelt amongst us." Once a disciple contacts this world, then the master of the audible form of the world resides within him every moment of the day and night and never leaves him. Here word never means ever after, and even after the end of man's physical existence on earth, it will follow him till he achieves final consummation. This audible sound or voice of God, commonly known as sound current, is the life impulse that the master gives at initiation. It may be heard as a sound coming from a distance and gradually develops into such sweetness that no music on earth can excel it. This is the water of life, the spring of immortality, the elixir of life, and the nectar of spirituality spoken about in holy books. 4. Man has an inner eye with which he can see within himself in the higher regions when the veil is rent asunder by a competent living master. In this state, he remains perfectly conscious and undergoes amazing experience. To ascend to upper regions without a competent master is fraught with dangers. The repetition of names is given to the disciple as a weapon against all dangers. It acts also as a password to all spiritual planes, gives strength and sustenance to the body and mind. during trouble and affliction, brings his soul nearer the master, is instrumental in achieving concentration, and imparts many other diverse powers. Simon given by a so-called master is merely a group of words, but given by a competent master, it becomes electrified words. Initiation commences with the explanation and description of the inner spiritual regions and the way in which the path is to be pursued, opening of the inner region to see various regions with distinct heavenly lights in contact with the divine link. Sound principle constitutes the practical side of initiation. Daily practice of these combined with simmon is called meditation. In addition to this, the master gives brief instructions on pure and simple living, devoting regular time to the practices and other words of advice. Diaries of progress must be kept, and the mistakes of old and new disciples are corrected from time to time to ensure progress. The whole ceremony takes from 2 to 3 hours. Master saints never show any miracles, except in very rare cases to a disciple due to special circumstances. Miracles are in accordance with the laws of nature, but are nevertheless terrible, entangling webs detrimental to the higher ideals of man to approach the Almighty God. It is something that an ordinary man does not care to study or ignore deliberately, for the simple reason that it involves immense self-control and training of the mind with restrictions that the easy-going man of today does not like to tolerate or pursue. The miraculous powers achieved after a lengthy period are instrumental in doing both good and in harming. And as they are utilized more to harm than anything else, are looked down upon by all truly spiritual persons. The masters are in possession of supreme power, but their mission is sacred. An initiated disciple whose inner vision has been opened sees any number of miracles at each step. To hesitate to believe in a master without seeing miracles is as ridiculous as our refusal to believe that a certain person is a multimillionaire, unless he shows us his money. He may have all his money deposited in the bank and like to spend it in the way he chooses without caring for public applause and approval. Out of an audience of several thousand watching a magician perform his miracles, only a very small number would thereby be induced to learn the art. Those who are anxious to see miracles are not true seekers. Today the world is crying for a better understanding for peace and freedom from conflict. This science of self-analysis that reveals the brotherhood of man and the fatherhood of God is the remedy that can reconstruct culture and propagate harmony between man and man. Try to measure the depth of God's mercy and grace through a master saint, his visible representative. He who claims to love the invisible God and has no regard or love for his visible brother man is lost indeed. To love, revere and feel grateful to our fellow man is to love and revere God. So too the love for the visible master, our closest connecting link with God, is in reality love for the Supreme Father. It has spirituality at the end and is not idolatry. The atmosphere in which such a genuine master moves is charged with currents of peace and love, which affect those who come into contact with him. Even letters written by or on behalf of him carry current of ecstasy that influence the innermost recesses of hearts. Guru precedes God. Such a person was Master Hazur Baba Sam Singh Maharaj, who remained with his disciples for a great number of years, and even now, after he had left the body, still waits on his loved ones, and even those who contacted him once with love and sincerity in their hearts. Love knows no law, and he is still appearing in his luminous radiant form even on lower spiritual planes for their sake. Not one, but hundreds can testify to what ignorant people would call an illusion. On the physical plane, he is still showering his blessings through his medium at Ruhani Satsang Savana Ashram, who now in turn guides men in all spiritual matters. One bulb is fused and is replaced by another bulb. All who approach the new master are still getting positive experiences without any exception. And anybody with such a golden opportunity has only to contact the master and his wishes will be fulfilled. His heart will overflow with happiness and his weary shoulders will be relieved of their burden of cares and worries. Thank you so much.